Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Women's Soccer Zone. Lovely to have you with us once again. And of course, I am again joined by my friend JJ Duke out in the United States from Our Game magazine. JJ, how you doing, pal?
Karen, always a pleasure to be back, including the squad.
Good man, good man. Always a pleasure to have you back, mate. Well, busy show for us on this one, so we're not going to take too long to do the introductions, but big news that broke on the day of recording regarding the Australian Matildas. So we're going to have a chat about some strike action that is potentially taking place. We're going to do our usual roundup of the FA Women's Super League and the NWSL. We'll have a little look at the French and German leagues as well, which have just kicked off. And we've got a couple of interviews as well. I managed to catch up with Doncaster Rovers Belle Sue Smith, who played in a top-of-the-table clash with Reading Women for Doncaster Rovers Belles recently. And I spoke to Gilly Flaherty, who has just been called up into the England squad for only the second time after some impressive form for Chelsea Ladies. So without further ado, JJ, we best get cracking.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
So, first off, as mentioned in our introduction, big news coming out of Australia today, JJ, on the day of recording. The Matildas have gone on strike, or are certainly intending to go on strike, after talks with the Football Federation Australia broke down, and it now means that the international friendlies that Australia have against the United States in America are potentially now in jeopardy.
No, that they are. I mean, it's always interesting, and no matter what sport it is, after a major event, it's very likely that you see some sort of negotiation of money come up. And, you know, unfortunately for the Matildas group, who have proven themselves now not only as a contender but a real threat in future football competitions to be a team that can win something, they feel that it's time that they should be compensated for what they're worth. And, you know, personally, I'm fully behind their effort.
Likewise, 100%. I think when you look at the Australian team over the last few years, in my view, along with England, are probably one of the most improved nations in women's world football. You look at the players that they've developed, they've got a young team that have built on the improvements and the achievements of the World Cup in 2011. Put in a good performance in the World Cup in 2015, coming out of that group of death and only narrowly going out in the quarterfinals to Japan. And those players, as you say, they need to be paid what they are worth, and that is clearly not happening.
No, it is. And, you know, this comes at an interesting time because, as we all know in women's football, that there is no year gap between the World Cup and the next major tournament. The Olympics are less than 12 months away. Qualification for some countries has already been underway, and for others will be going in short order. For Australia, they do get some high-profile friendly matches, but coming to the U.S., where a lot of their players already played during the summer, you know, that's a big opportunity for exposure, for playing against the world's best team. That's now confirmed after the U.S. won the World Cup a few months ago, and you know, that's the best competition that they're going to get in preparation for their Olympic qualifiers. Now, if they don't get these matches, not only will that preparation get, not to say thrown out the door, but it's not going to become available for them. They're going to basically be not able to train together as a team until everything gets resolved. And, you know, the players with the Westfield W League starting up in a couple of weeks, there'll be some interesting subplots heading into when the campaign opens next month.
Yeah, and a lot of them have, I wouldn't say they've been particularly vocal, but if you log on to social media, Twitter in particular, there are hashtags, back the players, protect the players. Players like Caitlin Ford have come out, Kaya Simon, a few others as well. It's a shame, though, isn't it, that it's come to this, because we are forever trying to get women's football promoted, trying to get it out there to a bigger audience, and the World Cup was a real opportunity to do that. This is an opportunity for Football Federation Australia to almost build on what the foundations that the Australian players laid in that World Cup, and clearly they're not doing that.
No, and it's a little bit more than that, because I'm doing my research. I'm reading. It's not only just the Matildas; it's the Socceroos, the men's national team, and some of men's domestic league players. This has been going on for nearly half a year now. You know, just last week alone, the Socceroos did not participate in scheduled promotional activities before playing a World Cup qualifier. So, there's a lot of things that are coming into this right now that's not only impacting one side of the ball, it's impacting all sides of the ball. And, the W League now this year, as you said, Kieran, this is a big opportunity for Australia to capitalize. They've just added a new team in Melbourne City. So, there's going to be kind of like in the same fold as the Manchester City ladies. There could be that potential for some high-profile players to come there. And there's new TV deals that I'm understanding that are in the works, which could grow the game to new levels that haven't been seen before in that country. And you really hope that everyone can get down to the table, put in the hours, and get something signed, because if not, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to go by the wayside.
And one of the big knock-on effects, as we mentioned earlier, is that if nothing is resolved, then the Australians don't travel to the US, and two games that have been scheduled for the US's victory tour don't happen. What's the knock-on effect for the US team if the Australians don't travel?
Well, I mean, obviously, first off, for the fans that bought tickets, I don't know what the U.S. is going to do. I don't exactly have direct connections with U.S. soccer and would be able to say, well, this is the contingency plan. I mean, the U.S. will try to hope to find a national team on short notice to come here. But if they don't get those matches or don't get one of those two matches, players don't get their compensation. The fans don't get to see them play. These are two cities in Birmingham and Detroit that, the U.S. women's national team don't often go there. So it's a real big blow for a lot of people. It's not just, the players on the field. It's a lot of things behind the scenes as well.
We mentioned the USA. This isn't actually the first time that a team has gone on strike or certainly had difficulties with its federation, because as we were talking before recording, 1996, before the Atlanta Olympics, The U.S. women's national team had some issues, didn't they?
Yeah, that they did. And actually, the reason how that first came to mind is the HBO documentary that came out, the Dare to Dream, that profiled the 1991ers, Mia Hamm, Christine Lilly, Joy Fawcett, Julie Foudy, etc. And during the Olympics, this was after 95 World Cup where the U.S. women's national team fell out in the semifinals. First time that women's soccer was going to be in the Olympics. Big opportunity, of course. You have they're going to play games in massive football stadiums, and you had all the main players that were going to sit out because of bonuses if the U.S. were to medal. Unlike, say, the men, if the men's team medaled, then they would have gotten bonuses. If my memory serves me correct, the U.S. women would have only received bonuses if they won the whole thing, and that's it. That's a lot of pressure to, you'll get compensated and you'll only get your real due if you win gold. Now, naturally, everything did get resorted in a sense. I think it was if they won gold or silver, they would get bonuses. It was a lot of players that sat out. And I remember that was documented in that piece that allowed Brandi Chastain to get back into the national team picture, because at that time she was not in favor after the 1991 World Cup. And with those main players sitting out, then others had the opportunity to come back in. Everything got resolved, and then obviously the rest is history. But this is not the first time.
Well, we hope that this can get resolved, because it's a talented bunch of players down in Australia, and I'm sure that they would not want to be put in this position. But as you say, we both back them. I think it's the right thing to do, and hopefully Football Federation Australia will listen to them. They can resolve something, and those games against the US, which will be cracking games based on what we saw at the World Cup, do take place. But we might as well stick with the US, mate, seeing as we've discussed the fact that those friendlies are potentially in jeopardy, and have a chat about the NWSL, and the regular season has now come to an end, and we now know our four playoff teams. They are the Seattle Reign, Chicago Red Stars, Washington Spirit, and FC Kansas City. Those playoff games are going to be exciting. Seattle Reign taking on Washington Spirit, and FC Kansas City traveling to the Chicago Red Stars. It's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, knockout tournament. That's really what this is. It's a knockout tournament. Win your first game, survive in advance. So Seattle and Chicago are hosting. Chicago electing to bypass their traditional home venue of Benedictine University, and they're going to be playing at Toyota Park, which they did play their last match. It was a 1-1 draw against Houston. But, you know, for me, you know, I enjoy working with the Red Stars organization. It's a great group there. They have a good home field advantage on playing on that very fast artificial surface at Benedictine University. Now they go to a natural grass facility, Toyota Park, a good MLS venue. They're going to be hosting FCKC, who now plays their home matches at Swope Soccer Park on grass. So that's going to have a little bit of effect. Also, that match is going to be played in the middle of the afternoon on Sunday. So in years past where we've had FCKC, actually the last 2 years, they've hosted that middle of the afternoon semifinal match. And both those times, the heat index was over 100 degrees. Now, I'm not sure it's going to be that warm in Chicago. Should be quite interesting, but you have to back up the Red Stars. They're a little bit, you know, more emotionally charged right now. It's the first time in organizational history, at least playing in a top-level league, that they've gotten into the postseason when they're in the WPSL and WPSL Elite. They were in postseason play, but, you know, there's been some players that have been with that franchise for a long time now. I've been waiting and waiting to get into this, and they've been so close on a couple of occasions, and now they have it, and they have a home match, and you know, I can really tell you that these players are fired up.
It's crazy to think, isn't it, that this is their first playoff appearance, because they came flying out the traps this season, maintained that when their international players had disappeared. And actually, I remember when we were talking about our preview, we were a little bit worried about them because they had so many players missing when they went to the World Cup. But those young players stepped up. I know that you've interviewed a few for the next edition of Our Game magazine, and I'm sure people will want to have a look out for that. And you have to give them credit, don't you? Yes, they weren't able to maintain those results and ended up finishing runners-up, but they deserve a lot of credit for the way they perform this season, don't they?
It's all about consistency, and as long as you get yourself into a position to win it, they were consistent, and they got themselves in a position to win it. Now, they have to put it together for two games, but, yeah, you credit Rory Dames. You know, and I've said all along that, you know, he is one of the coaches in the NWSL that truly knows and can mine through the fields to get talent and to incorporate that talent into his squad and what they're trying to do. And, you know, everything has kind of fallen into place at the right time. But, again, it's a one-and-off tournament. They're playing FC Kansas City. That is a veteran ball club right there where, obviously, they're the defending champions. They've been to the playoffs twice before. They know what it takes to get the job done. And especially when we're talking about emotion, you look on the other side with the Blues, you have a couple of players, or at least one of major note, that's going to be hanging up her boots at the end of the season. That's Lauren Holiday. And she'll want to go out on top.
She will, and actually we would have had Shannon Box doing the same, but she's obviously decided to hang her boots up before the playoffs. It's interesting to see how that one goes. The other semi-final will, of course, be the Seattle Reign hosting Washington Spirit, a repeat of last year's semi-final. The two teams met on the last day of regular season. The Spirit were suffered their first home defeat of the entire season. Jess Fishlock and Megan Rapinoe scoring two pretty decent strikes in that game. The difficulty for them, they don't travel as well as they do play at home. They're going to be heavily reliant on someone like Crystal Dunn. What do they have to do to try and overturn the result of last week and the result of last season?
They have to, and pardon the pun, but they have to weather the storm. You know, The Reign are a team that when they're at home and they have still yet to lose a game at Memorial Stadium in 2 years, they're not a team that they're a team that wants to play from ahead. They don't want to try and have that comeback mentality. Now, they have been challenged on a few times this year, including a couple of weeks ago, that Sky Blue nearly went out to Seattle and pulled away a 1-0 result if it wasn't for a stoppage time goal. So if I'm the Washington Spirit, they play a good game that can match up well with the Reign. They like to be a possession-oriented team. They can move the ball down both flanks if needed, and they can play very direct when they need to. You mentioned Crystal Dunn, who's finished the regular season as the Golden Boot winner. They need to keep it as close as possible, as late as possible. For them, I would not be so minded if that match were to go to extra time, because I think the Spirit are a little bit of a grittier team, and when the, again, kind of cliche, but when the going gets tough, you look to the players like Christine Nairn and Crystal Dunn, among others, that could be the one that bags the late winner.
Yeah, and I noticed that they played Ali Krieger in a more of a central midfield role at the weekend, which was interesting to see. I think you're right. I think this one could be a lot closer than people think. And that Spirit team, again, following on from last season, for me, they've got to the same stage at this stage, but much better than they were last year, building on the disappointing first season that they had. But it's going to be an interesting one, and I think those two semi-finals are going to be really, really intriguing. Don't want to go too much into the other teams, mate, because we'll do a little bit of a season review in the coming weeks when the campaign is finished. But little shout-out for Houston Dash, bottom of the league last year, and they finished fifth. Granted, it was a narrow fifth, but it was fifth nonetheless. And this was a team that were in the headlines at the start of the season through the acquisition of Carly Lloyd and Stephanie Roach, who unfortunately for her and for the club didn't quite work out. But they came into the season with a bit of pressure, I think. And actually, do you know what? They made some decent acquisitions, and I think that they deserve credit. They finished above some really solid teams, certainly in the likes of the Portland Thorns and Western New York Flash. In fact, the teams they have finished above, not bad teams at all, so I want to give them a little bit of credit, because I think they showed up this season, and if they can build on what they've achieved this year, then you might see them in the playoffs next year.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think there is definitely some disappointment in that camp, because I know, as you said, with a lot of names that they have on that team, they could have very well made the playoffs. But yeah, improvement is improvement. Last year, the Houston Dash organization only had, 7 weeks to put together a team. They had a full off season. They made signings for not only the present, but for the future. They seem to have a good group there, and they can make a run at it next year, no doubt about it.
Absolutely, absolutely. As I said, we will discuss the other teams in a bit of a season review once the campaign has finished. So that rounds up the NWSL, and when we come back, we will come a bit closer to my home after covering JJ's, and we'll have a look at the FAWSL.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So welcome back. As discussed already, NWSL now done and dusted on this show. We focus on the FA Women's Super League, and I've avoided it in the shows leading up to this one, JJ, because as I said, some very one-sided scorelines, but we are into the quarterfinals of the Continental Cup. The standout tie, Arsenal Ladies against Manchester City Women. Now, a bit of controversy in terms of a few people on social media, including players, where the teams that won their respective groups have actually ended up playing against each other. Arsenal Ladies won their group and Manchester City won their group. No seeds in this competition, and those two, unfortunately for them, have been drawn against each other in the quarterfinals. I'd just be interested to know your views, because I know you don't have a cup competition out in the States with the NWSL, but it almost seems a little bit, not unfair, but I know that few people have had a few views on that.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and personally, I hope that at some point we have some sort of cup competition here. I know that NWSL coaches have been a little bit vocal at times whenever the men's FA Cup goes on, saying, hey, why can't we get some of this together with both the NWSL and lower levels? That's a story for another day. But, you know, there in knockout sports, there's always somebody that's going to have the rough road. You know, we saw it in the World Cup a couple of months ago that we had Germany and France play off in the quarterfinals. We had the second round match. What was it? Sweden and Germany? I mean, you know, you're going to have teams that are eventually going to have to play a tough team to get there. So, yeah, is it a bit unfortunate that you have two of the premier or the marquee teams going at it? Sure. But it's going to be one great match. They're going to lay everything on the line. And, you know, the winner of that match will have a little bit of an inside track towards retaining or to at least getting the cup.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's some, I mean, there's some decent ties in there. Reading Women, the only team outside of the top division to make it through to the quarterfinals, they travel to Notts County Ladies. Bristol Academy, they have to host Birmingham City Ladies, I think it is, and then Liverpool have a big tie against Chelsea Ladies. So some big games in that quarterfinals. And I think it'll be really interesting. Man City, the current holders, Arsenal starting to get a few players back in terms of Vicky Lasada, and Jordan Nobbs has made a comeback and scored in the league last week. And those quarterfinals will certainly be very interesting. But we should probably move on to the league, having discussed the Continental Cup very briefly. Liverpool Ladies, current champions for the last 2 years, lost at home to Arsenal Ladies at the weekend. That means mathematically their reign as champions is now over. Made a lot of made a few acquisitions before the season, some high profile ones, no bigger than Asisat Oshoala. They'll be a bit disappointed with their season, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as you said, winners of the last couple last year coming down to the final seconds of the season and ending up retaining the trophy. You know, again, Chelsea has been the team that have been at the top nearly wire to wire. Manchester City Women are nipping at their heels with Arsenal right there. City does have a match in hand, and they'll be going at it against Liverpool at home in what, a couple of days from now, isn't it? Actually, 2 days from recording, they'll be going at it against Liverpool. So that should be a match. If Liverpool want to at least have any say about how the season's going to end, if they defeat Manchester City, I think Chelsea probably is just about with one hand on the trophy. If City Women were to take home that match, then it's going to be a interesting final couple of weeks of the season. You look at how things are going to go. And actually, Liverpool play Chelsea the week after. So, and that's also on the road. So that is at home. So it'll be curious to see how Liverpool can go about it. Are they going to pack the bags, or are they going to at least put in a decent fight?
I'm going to have to give myself a slap on the wrist and rewind a little bit, because I didn't have the fixtures in front of me. It's actually Birmingham City hosting Chelsea in the Continental Cup, and it's Bristol Academy against Liverpool. I got that one wrong, so I will hold my hands up to that one and a black mark next to my name. But going back to the league, I just wanted to correct that one before people start tweeting us and saying, but you got the fixtures wrong. And I hold my hands up to that one.
It's okay. We have those moments.
Absolutely. Me more than you, my friend. Me more than you. We're not perfect. But I look at the form of Manchester City is still something that Chelsea need to be considerate of, isn't it? Because still winning games, still grinding out results. This past weekend, got a 1-0 win over Sunderland Ladies, who, probably fair to say, Sunderland have dipped a little bit in the last month or so, and I think their title challenge is now over. But it's probably, for me, between Chelsea and Man City now.
Yeah, and you know, again, we're going to learn a lot after this, well, week, really. And the Continental Cup, how that match is going to go about. We're going to see the real identity of Chelsea. We're going to see the real identity of Manchester City. Maybe even Arsenal as well, if Arsenal can grind out a result. They're not completely out of it yet. They have to hope that a few results can fall their general direction. Let's see how do they end up this season, does Arsenal? They travel to Sunderland in a couple of weeks, and then in early October they host Birmingham. So they do have matches in their favor, but they're going to need to win. They'll need to win with some, you know, fortitude behind it, and they're going to need Chelsea to slip up. That's really how I see Chelsea not winning the title, is by doing it onto themselves.
And personally, I don't see Chelsea slipping up. I think they have learned a lot from last season's last day nightmare for them. I've spoken to a few of the players over the last week for various articles that I'm writing. I spoke to Gemma Davison at the weekend, and yes, she wasn't involved in that team last year, but you know, she spoke to me and said, you know, I've spoken to someone like Enya Luko, and Enya's telling her that, you know, I'm not feeling the pressure as much as I was last season. I think it was a unique position for some of those players, and you know, Chelsea have never won a league before, and they've never won a trophy before. They've got an FA Cup under their belt now. They've got a lot of quality in that squad. They added to what they had last year. They've got, for me, a world-class keeper in Hedvig Lindahl of Sweden. I would be surprised if they made the slip-up that they made last year, and I don't see them being caught, and I think it will be their season. And obviously they've got the Champions League to look forward to, as have Liverpool. The draws for those were made a few weeks ago, and we won't go into that because that was a few weeks ago and is a bit dated, but we'll certainly go through some of the results as and when the games take place. But it's interesting, very, very interesting. And actually, I was able to catch up with Gilly Flaherty, who this week was announced in England's Euro 2017 squad. England travel to Estonia and play on the 21st of September. Euro 2017 qualifiers do kick off in the next few weeks, so lots of international football for people in Europe to look forward to. And Gilly hasn't been in an England squad since the beginning of 2014. She's had to bide her time, she's had to be patient, but she's been in cracking form this season. Scored a cracking goal at the weekend as well against Notts County. Have a look on YouTube if you can find it. So I had a quick chat with her about her England call-up and Chelsea's form. So here she is. All right, so delighted to be joined by former guest and former co-presenter on Women's Soccer Zone, Gilly Flaherty, talking a day after the announcement of Mark Sampson's England squad for the game in Estonia. Gilly, must be delighted to have been called up. It's been a little while, but now you've got your chance.
Yeah, I mean, the call-up was, I say, a little bit out of the blue. I wasn't really thinking about it at all. Obviously, I watched the World Cup and stuff, but I never really thought that when the World Cup had finished, oh, now might be my chance to get in. What with obviously things going on with Chelsea at the moment, it's been really busy. So it's just been, that's been my main focus. So when I spoke to my manager and she said that there might be a call up coming, I was a little bit like, we'll see. And then obviously then I got the email to tell me, and it was a shock, but it was a nice shock as well.
I mean, you had a call up, people might forget. I think it was January, February 2014, you were in the squad that went over to La Manga, but unfortunately for you, you were injured. So you've had a little taste of what it's like to be in the England squad, and having had that taste and having had to wait so long for the next call-up, does it make you even more hungry to succeed now?
Yeah, definitely. And I was saying this last night to one of my friends, that I think when I got called up in that squad in La Manga, if I'm being completely honest with myself, that I 100% deserve to be called up. I think it was more so just because I was never included during Hope's time, that I think a lot of it was, you need to give her a call-up sort of thing, but I don't feel like I deserved it. So I feel like with this call-up, I feel like I've deserved it, because I've been obviously playing well for Chelsea. I mean, I had a meeting in January during the World Cup meeting. In January, and I spoke to Mark Arsene, he basically just said that he's going to see Emma. For me, that was obviously my motivation for this year, was just didn't have a chance really of being involved in the World Cup. So it was sort of like, then it was up to me then to graft the season and hopefully get the call up, which I have done.
I'm sure you won't mind me saying, but we've had discussions in the past, and you've said to me, Kieran, I haven't been called up because I don't think my face fits. Why do you think your face fits now?
Do you know what? I could say I've had like a face transplant or something, but I think more so I think that my attitude's changed. I've been more focused this year on my football probably than any year, and more focused than ever to make sure that Chelsea did well. And obviously that's been my main focus and my main goal week, is that Chelsea getting the results. And obviously if I'm playing well for Chelsea and Chelsea winning, then Mark's always said that he would look at us. So for me, that's been the motivation, obviously week in, week out, for me to get in there. And now obviously it's the hard thing getting in there, but it's even harder now to stay in there. So I'm prepared to do whatever I need to do.
So I know how much you loved Arsenal, and I know eyebrows were raised when you left the club. But I look at this Chelsea team and the way that you're playing, and your form in particular as well, and it looks like it's a really tight-knit squad and a really bright future ahead. I mean, how does this team compare to that Arsenal side that you were so successful in, and how good can this team be?
This team's got potential to become the very best. I know Emma's obviously got her sights on set in Europe as well as obviously the league, and for us obviously we're in the Champions League for the first time this year as well. So I mean, obviously it was heartbreaking and gutting to leave Arsenal, and it's something that deep down I probably never wanted to do, but it's an opportunity that I definitely couldn't turn down to become a professional footballer. And I look back now, obviously nearly 2 years ago now that was, and it's been the best decision that I've ever made when it comes to football, because I'm training full time and I'm enjoying it. I mean, I'm so lucky and thankful to do what I do as a job. But more so, I've got someone in Emma who supports me 1,000,000%, and has pushed me to get this England call up as well. And I feel like I'm probably playing the best football at the moment in my career so far. So I love the club. I don't want to ever leave. I don't see my future elsewhere, and it's something that I want to push on and make sure that this club wins major trophies and that I'm right behind it as it happens.
And you've almost become a bit of a leader in that team as well, still only 24 years old, but one of the more experienced heads in terms of some of the players that you've got around you. Is that something that you're conscious of? Is that something that you've naturally progressed into, or is that something that Emma asked you to kind of take on a little bit?
Do you know, I think since I've been young, I've always been a leader. I've always been the one who talks on the pitch and always the one. I mean, I was captain at youth levels as well, both for club and country as well. So for me, something that's naturally been there, but it's something that I've really had to work on the past 2 years underneath Emma, because it's something that she's really pushed for me to become, and obviously given me the vice captaincy role at Chelsea. And she puts me forward for everything, for media work, for things, even writing in the programme, and so that we do a talk before we go out, before every game, and she's given me that responsibility. And obviously the Continental Cup, I've been captain in it as well. So she's pushing me to develop my own leadership skills. And I think last year I probably had a few spells where I sort of lost my head a little bit, and I didn't really necessarily think of the team. And I think this year I've been completely different, and I'm determined more than ever to make sure that this team crosses the line this year. And obviously Emma's developed me and my leadership qualities day in, day out at training and obviously in games as well. So it's obviously something that I see myself being, and it's something that hopefully will continue to develop as the seasons go on.
You mentioned being put forward for media work. I seem to remember over the summer you had a little stint on doing co-commentary during the World Cup, Gilly. How much did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'd rather have been there playing, but well, I got the call up from my agent saying that obviously I had to do the co-commentary for the quarterfinal between Japan and Australia. And yeah, it was interesting. It was good just to go down on the Friday night. I sort of did a practice run for the Germany-France game. Nigel Adderley, I did it with, was fantastic. It obviously showing me the ropes and being there to help me out as well and give me some tips and stuff. And I mean, it was great to be somewhat part of it. Obviously, like I said, I would have rather have been playing it. But again, to be involved in it in some way was fantastic. And also, I mean, I love doing media work. I've commentated on England versus Wales as well. And it's something that I'd like to look forward to, like to go into after, or well, even during my career, but more so after I've finished. But obviously, if it's something I could be playing in, I'd rather be doing that than commentating on it.
Well, I've digressed a little bit. We're now into the business end of the season. You're in the quarterfinals of the Continental Cup. You've won an FA Cup already. League title, it's in your hands. How important is the next month in terms of your team and your career in terms of what you achieve by the end of it?
It's a massive month. Probably the biggest month in the club's history. And probably in myself, it's probably one of the toughest months mentally, if anything. I think last year, I said it every day in the season when I've been interviewed about it. Last year, I believe happened for a reason. And I think if we would have won the league last year, it would have probably covered over a few cracks that we needed to fix. And you know what, we go into every game and we're constantly reminded of that last game against Man City that we never want to feel that way ever again. And probably in terms of football, that's probably the cruelest thing I've ever experienced. But I tell you what, it's probably been the best thing that's made me stronger and the best experience that will continue to live by me as my career goes on. So obviously we've got two games to play left in the league, and I think that's what's been the difference is that I'll say we probably was really naive in the sense of we probably thought we'd won it before we did when it come around and bit us on the backside, and now I think we literally take each game as it comes. We're not looking ahead to the Sunderland game at home. Obviously our next focus now is Birmingham and the Continental Cup, and then after that it'll obviously be Liverpool, and we've got a game plan for each game, and it obviously changes depending on our position, but you won't find a more focused group of individuals that will never let what happened last year ever happen again in their careers.
And final question, I've left it till last deliberately, the goals that you've been scoring. Now, we know a little bit of football trivia is that if you were to ask anyone who the first goal scorer was ever in the FAWSL, is of course yourself. Ironically, the goal for Arsenal came against Chelsea. But now you are scoring for fun, and this past weekend, you pulled off a little bit of a spectacular volley. Now, have you been working on that, or is that something that you just thought, it's popped down to me, I'm just going to hit it?
Do you know what? I get slaughtered in training sometimes for doing one-touch, two-touch games, and I sometimes pull off the worst passes ever, and I stitch people up. But I said, when I knew, I mean, some people might think, oh, it was a little bit of a fluke or lucky, whatever, but I knew as soon as that header was coming in, if you watch it back, I'd drop off probably 1 or 2 yards, and I think if that drops down to me, I'm just going to smash it. And luckily it fell right at me, and I thought, you know what have I got to lose? And I think as soon as it left my foot, I knew it was going in. And it was just one of them ones, obviously, I was lucky that it fell at the right place. But again, for me, a personal target is that obviously I want to be doing down the other end set pieces, and I want to be popping in some goals. And obviously, last year I only got one. I say one, but I tried to claim another one, which was an own goal. But this year, obviously, I've been making sure that I've been in the right positions and been putting them away. And if anything, I'm really pleased with the goals I've scored this year. Obviously, I've had a left foot go in. I've had another volley against Birmingham, bottom corner. And then I had a header in the Continental Cup. I tried to claim the one against Arsenal, but I don't think it happened. And then, obviously, the volley Sunday probably is the pick of the bunch, but for me it's just as long as it goes in, I don't care if it comes off my head or wherever. But obviously I'm going to try and push now to get that in the goal of the season as well, so obviously if anyone listens to the show could do me a favour if it comes out, so obviously get voting for me, that would be nice as well.
Well, you heard it there, a personal appeal from the girl herself. Well, Gilly, look, it's been a pleasure. I know you've been on the show before, but nice to have you on as a player who's just been called into the England squad. Wish you very well for when you meet up with the squad and your trip to Estonia, and we'll no doubt speak to you again soon.
Thank you very much, kid.
Women's Soccer Zone. Listen to the show on Audioboom or download via iTunes. Just search for Women's Soccer Zone.
So that was Gilly Flaherty. JJ, we won't go too much into the England squad because we'd probably need to go into all the squads that were named or have been named for Euro 2017 qualifiers. But you and I spoke about Beth Mead a few shows ago and her form. Left out by Mark Sampson for this squad. A little bit of surprise, that one.
Yeah, a little surprise. And also the thinness, if that is a word, or we could just use it right now, in the midfield position, that they only listed three midfielders for this upcoming camp, didn't they?
They did, yeah, and one of those is a new debutant in Izzy Christensen from Manchester City. I think the other two were Jill Scott of Man City and Joe Potter of Birmingham. I know that Mark Sampson came out and said that a few players have been rested. There's no Jodie Taylor, there's no Leanne Sanderson, obviously both playing out in America with the Portland Thorns. Jade Moore is currently injured. Jordan Nobbs is only just coming back from injury. So Karen Carney has been rested. So it's interesting. I think, dare I say it, if you're going to rest players and you're going to try new players out, then you look at teams like Estonia, and I mean that with the greatest respect, but they're not going to trouble England too much. I think you can afford to rest players in the games against some of the smaller nations. But I agree with you. I can't ever remember seeing a squad where only three midfielders have been named. And you have to wonder if there's any injuries picked up between now and the 21st of September. As I said, there are Continental Cup games going on this coming weekend. It may well be that he has to go back to the drawing board and call someone up. I don't know. But, yeah, Beth Mead, the big surprise for me. 11 goals in 12 games this season so far. Been in form. You know, all you can do is score against the opposition put in front of you, and that hasn't been enough, unfortunately, for her.
Yeah, but when you're saying it, to kind of carry on the point for a second, when you're saying Mark Sampson has the opportunity to rest some players, you know, this is not going to be the only time that in qualification that, you know, he's going to run into this situation. So, yeah, while it's a little bit surprising that she's not included, it would really stun me if she's not included at any of the upcoming camps that England has over, say, like the next 2 or 3 months, because if she's not in there and continues the form that she's been on, that's something that's a little bit of a controversy. I mean, you know, is it surprising right now? Yes, but, you know, maybe there might have been something in it, and we go from there. But that it is a storyline I think we'll have to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to finish off, the question is always, who do you drop? You know, people will always say, oh, Beth Mead should have been in the squad, me included. But you look at the pool of players that Mark Sampson has got to pick from. I said it on Twitter, you know, this is the most talented and biggest pool of players that any England manager has had to pick from. You've got Jess Clark back in there, has been scoring goals for Notts County. Not as many as Beth, granted, but has got experience of international football. Frank Kirby is in there. Gemma Davison is back in the squad. Not an out-and-out striker, but plays wide and creates goals and scores goals and has been in great form for Chelsea this year. It's difficult, you know, it's difficult to find a spot for her and a space for her. And as I said, there's no room for Jodie Taylor and Leanne Sanderson rested. But you look at the players that he's picked, where do they fit in when they're available again? So it's a difficult one for Mark Sampson. I do sympathise with him. I think, as I say, I would have had Beth in there, give her a go, see how she gets on. We know she scores goals. It's something that she's done for the last few years for her club. She's done it at England youth level. Give her a chance at senior level, but I'm sure, as you say, that chance will definitely come. I mean, it's not surprising that other nations have left players out as well. You know, France have named their squad. They've got a friendly coming up against Brazil, playing in Le Havre. They also play their first Euro 2017 qualifier against Romania, and there's no room for Claire Lavoisier of Lyon. You know, we saw, sadly, Lavoisier miss the decisive penalty at the World Cup against Germany in that shootout, and there's no room for her, which is a big surprise. But you know, there are now so many top quality players in so many different countries. We are going to see that happen.
Yeah, and I think also at the same time, players just need maintenance time. I mean, you know, you can only go so long before needing to take, not saying a month off, but saying, you know, taking a week or two of, you know, non-football related activities. Just let the mind reset, because this has been a grinding, you know, 12 months. There's going to be another grinding 12 months for a bunch of nations, those who are involved with Olympic qualifying, for those who are involved for European qualifying, for those that are going to be involved in the Olympics period. You know, it's a long time ahead that, you know, players are still going to need to be on. So, you know, even from a U.S. perspective, and I know Jill Ellis has come out and said that some of these victory tour matches that, you know, there's a chance that she could be calling in some players that weren't involved in the World Cup squad, because players are just tired and they need some sort of break. And also at the same time, there could be players that are still waiting in the wings, and when their chance comes, they may take advantage of it. So all across the board, I'm not totally shocked right now. But if the form continues on for players like Lavoisier, who don't get involved in squads, that, like the Beth Mead scenario, that'll be something that we have to address when it comes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I digressed a little bit because we were talking about Beth Mead, and you know, she's continued her form from FAWSL2 last year, and I actually went to a game at the weekend. I went and saw the top of the table clash between Reading Women and Doncaster Rovers Bells. Doncaster currently top, Reading in second. Really good game, mate. Really, really competitive. Finished in a 2-2 draw. Late equaliser by former Arsenal player Bianca Bragg for Reading gave them a very late share of the spoils. But it was really interesting to see what I think will be a WSL1 fixture next year. Yeovil Ladies are still in with a chance, as are Everton Ladies. Doncaster and Everton play each other this Thursday, and I think if Doncaster win, they will be promoted. So it was a really, really interesting game, and two really decent sides. And I actually managed to catch up with BBC expert, I'm going to call her, Sue Smith, who of course has played a number of games for England in the past. I just wanted to have a chat with her about the WSL2 and Doncaster's chances of promotions. Here she is. Joined by Sue Smith for Women's Soccer Zone, just come off the pitch after a 2-2 draw away at Reading. Sue, bit of a heartbreaker there at the end, but still very much a case of when and not if you're going to be back in FAWSL1.
Well, we hope so. You know, I think it's still in our hands, which is good. We knew it was going to be a tough task to come here. Reading are a good team, you know, very physical. And yeah, we were disappointed to obviously concede so late on. You know, we've worked a lot on game management and trying to see the game out, and that was something that we couldn't do tonight. So we're a bit disappointed with that. It's something we need to learn, we need to work on. But like I say, it was probably a fair result in the end. I think 2-2 was probably a fair reflection. I think we probably had the better of the first half, they probably had the better of the second half.
Good run that you guys are on though, especially with the Continental Cup win against Sunderland. Granted, it didn't mean progression into the quarterfinals, but if you add it to your league form as well, you're finishing the season at the most important time with a really, really good set of results.
Yeah,
well,
I think we are, and I think, you know, the girls are feeling confident. I think, you know, we're scoring goals, which is nice. And I think we've just got better and better as the games have gone on. I don't think we played the football that we can play tonight. I think we can play much better. And again, you know, it is probably down to the way that Reading pressed us and stopped us playing. So it's credit to them. But I think, you know, we've got a lot of things, I think, to work on before we play Everton on Thursday. But yeah, I think we're pleased with how it's going, and I think we just need to keep progressing. And like I said, the game still, or the promotion place is still in our hands, which is nice, because last season we were just hoping that Sunderland slipped up, which they didn't do.
No goal for you today, but another sweet left-footed free kick that met the head of Leandra Little. You're turning into the David Beckham of this division with your set pieces, because the last game that I saw you play was at Watford and you spanked one into the top corner. Something you work on?
It is, yeah. It's something that obviously, you know, we practice in training, and I know that if I get a good delivery, I know that we've got Leandra Little, we've got Rhiannon Roberts, we've got Jade now who can come in, and they're all very, very good in the air. So you know that if you get your delivery right, we've got players that can get on the end of it. So yeah, it's something, it's important. I think we all need to work on that, and if they can keep happening, then happy days.
Ironically, your next game is against Everton Ladies. You are a blue. How sweet would it be to secure promotion against your... Okay, granted, it's the men's team that you support, but you're still an Evertonian.
I am an Evertonian, yes, and I've got to put that out of my head. My mum and dad come along and they really struggle to support Doncaster, but no, they don't. But yeah, you know, I've been a blue all my life. But yeah, obviously, you know, that's the men's side. When we play against the women, it'll be complete focus. We played them in the Conti Cup, which was a really exciting game. You know, I think for their neutral, I don't think for the managers necessarily. I think it was 3-2 in the end. But yeah, it's going to be a tough game again. We know that Everton are good. They'll want to put one over on us, and they're still in contention as well, so they'll be, you know, really up for it, but so will we, and yeah, we can't wait for the challenge.
A couple of years away from the WSL1 now for you and for this team. How much are you looking forward? I know it's not secured yet, but it's looking quite likely, so let's assume that you are going to be there. I mean, how much are you looking forward to that challenge of being up there again? Women's football is thriving at the moment. We know how much exposure it's getting. And to be back in the elite, to be back in that division, how important is that for you at the stage of your career as well? And that's with the greatest respect, of course.
Yeah, no, of course. Massively important. I think that's something that every player wants to do. You want to test yourselves against the best players in the country, and that is WSL1. So we were disappointed not to go up last season. I think, you know, we've put everything into going up. We've got everything behind the scenes right now. So it's a case of we have to do the business on the pitch, which hopefully we will do and go up there. So yeah, I think everyone's really excited. Hopefully it'll then go professional. You know, we can sort of train a lot more, and you'll see the girls develop and progress even further.
I know it's not about one player, but talk to me about Courtney Sweetman-Kirk and her goals this season. She's really stepped up to the plate, hasn't she?
She has, you know, and I think she's disappointed not to score today, which is the sign of a, you know, a quality striker. And yes, she's stepped up to the plate. She's scored goals, which is really important. And, you know, she's that natural goal scorer as well, which, again, that's what you want. And, yeah, she works really hard for the team. So she's been a really good addition for us.
You get a little bit of stick from Jackie Oatley now and again on social media. If and when you secure your promotion on Thursday, will you be expecting a bottle of champagne sent to you?
Well, that would be very nice. Yeah, she does give me a little bit of stick. It's funny because we text each other and, you know, when I scored with a header, she was like, no way did you score that with your head. Like, did it just hit you? So, yeah, we do have a bit of banter. But, yeah, Jackie's great and a real supporter of the women's game. And I think she said she was actually going to come to one of our games in London. So hopefully she'll be at the London Bees game. That would be quite nice to see her there.
Well, I know Jackie listens to this show. So there you go, Jack. If you are listening, if Sue does indeed secure promotion on Thursday, you owe her a bottle of champagne.
Yeah. Well,
thanks very much, Sue. Appreciate
definitely.
It.
Thank you very much. Bottle of champagne and she has to come to our games.
There you go, you heard it.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
So that was Sue Smith talking about Doncaster Rovers Belles. Expect to see her and her team in WSL 1 in 2016, unless there's some major, major hiccup. So, done with WSL, JJ. We're going to make our first venture into Europe for a little while, and the Frauen Bundesliga and the French First Division have now kicked off. Whenever I've done shows in the past, this show has been going for 2.5 years, whenever I talk about French football and whenever I talk about the French League, it always seems to be dominated by Lyon, or the conversation certainly seems to be dominated by Lyon. We know about their qualities. We know that they lost a couple of players over the summer, Lara Dickenman and Elise Busoglia. Both moved on, went to Wolfsburg. Replaced them with Claire Lavoisier and Mbok Barty, the French defender. I think they signed her from Guingamp. Lavoisier came from Montpellier. And it's the same old story. 2 games, 2 wins, 16 goals, a 9-0 and a 7-0 win. It's difficult to get enthusiastic about a league where it's the same...
Same story, different year?
Yeah. Same story, different year. Same individuals lighting up the league. How do you get excited as a Lyon fan to go and watch your team knowing that they are likely to stick 8 or 9 goals past some opposition?
I mean, for those who like scoring, you go to see scoring. I mean... Well, let's be fair. The Lyon women's team, of course, has been long time heralded as one of the best European club teams. If anyone disagrees with that, then, you know, in fairness, you haven't watched a whole lot of women's soccer in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years. They're a team that they can put out results. They're a team that is groomed to not only dominate the league, win the cup, but they're going to challenge the Champions League trophy every season. You know, we've had some challengers in the past. You know, obviously, Paris Saint-Germain is the current team that is trying to stick their nose into the business of Lyon and try and challenge for a cup. We've had UVC in the past. Montpellier are, as you and I discussed before the show, trying to be that third team that could say, hey, you know, don't completely forget about us, as they've won their first 2 matches and have, without giving up a goal, and have scored 10. So it teams like that can challenge, but at the same time, yeah, if you're Lyon, you already are probably, I mean, no disrespect, of course, to the rest of the teams that are in the French division, but you're already looking ahead to Champions League.
Yeah, and this is where they probably need to buck their ideas up a little bit, because the last 2 years, they haven't progressed as far as they normally would do. They got knocked out by PSG last year, and the year before, they obviously lost in the final to Wolfsburg in London, a game that I saw in 2013, I think it was. And that's probably a focus for them. I think that Wolfsburg have certainly stepped up to the plate. We saw Frankfurt win it last year. It's a challenge for them to try and get back to that status that they had in the Champions League. And the difficulty for me is that they are coming up against PSG, Montpellier, maybe Juvisy, but the other games that they come up in that they play, it's not much of a challenge for them.
And if you're looking at the flip side, let's look at the teams that are competing in the German Frauen Bundesliga. Wolfsburg, quality. Bayern Munich, quality. FFC Frankfurt, quality. Yeah, I mean, even at sixth position, granted, it's match week two of the season, Turbina Potsdam, sixth position in the German Bundesliga. So, for the majority of the matches that German teams are playing, they're actually going out and competing. They have to, you know, you're not expecting that, oh, we're just going to have a stroll in the park, we could play, you know, not to have this American mindset, but we could basically play our JV team against whoever, win 7-0, carry on, whatever, wait for the big match to come. In Germany, you have to go out and compete every week. There aren't as many, you know, walkover matches as we like, which is why a lot of good players are going to Germany now, because they realize, oh, we're, you know, say outside of, you know, if we're talking in depth of league teams, you know, you've said yourself that the U.S. league, whatever league it has been, has always been the deepest league in terms of talent. Then Sweden has been in there for the past, couple of years, and then Germany is that, you know, the next league where for three quarters of the teams, you have to put in your best performance, and sometimes that best performance might not get you all 3 points. So that's why the French league, and I'm saying as a league, they need to get stronger, because if they want, or if they want to see their teams like Lyon and PSG have success in Champions League, then they need to give them some competition in the week leading up to it.
Absolutely, and there will be others that will argue, well, PSG got to the final last year. Yes, they did, and we don't argue that, but I think for me as a competition, you have professional teams, semi-professional teams, and amateur teams all in the same league, and that is not going to work, and that is not how it should be. You need a competitive league if you want your best teams to get even better. And the reality is that Lyon was so far ahead of everyone. Now teams have caught up. Have Lyon pushed on as those teams have caught up with them? And the answer in terms of Champions League wins in the last few years would be no. And you mention the Frauen Bundesliga, and it's a good opportunity for us to move over there. They are approaching week three. And it is the usual suspects at the top, no denying that, Wolfsburg, Bayern Munich and FFC Frankfurt. But you mentioned Turbine Potsdam down in sixth. Bayer Leverkusen were able to sign Annika Kran, German international from PSG. They find themselves down in 10th. You know, it is a competitive league. It went down to the final day of the season last year with three teams all in a position to win the league. So it's interesting, very, very interesting. And one, you mentioned that the German league is a league that players want to go to. We know that individuals in the past, Veronica Bocchetti was there last year, Jessica Fischlock. This season, we've seen Sophie Schmidt join FFC Frankfurt. We've seen, as already mentioned, Elise Busoglia and Lara Dickenman go to Wolfsburg, other players as well. Christy Mewis was announced in the last week as having signed for Bayern Munich, played in Japan in the NWSL off-season last year. Going to have a little stint in Germany. That's going to be beneficial for her, isn't it?
Yeah, she's going to be playing with some high-quality talent in Bayern Munich. And it's what I'm understanding, it's a short-term loan through the rest of the calendar season, or calendar year, I should say, and then comes back, gets some recovery, and ready to go for the NWSL. But this is, for her, one of the best moves that she's made in her career. She's going to continue to play at a high level for the next few months. I'm curious if she is eligible for Champions League or not with Bayern Munich. That's something that I'll have to do some research. If she is, then she's going to get to play in Champions League matches.
There wouldn't be any reason for her not to be. That's what I was sorry to jump in there, mate. There wouldn't be any reason for her not to be. Jess Fischlock had a short stint with Glasgow City a couple of years ago. She played in the Champions League. I would be surprised if they've signed Christy just to play in the league. And what's also interesting, as you mentioned, and you're correct, I think the loan runs through to the 31st of December. NWSL teams don't tend to return for pre-season training until February. Is there potentially a thought at the back of Christy's mind that there is Olympic qualifying in February? Is she potentially thinking, I want to be available for that?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, the one big factor that you do have to remember, and people sometimes forget, the World Cup roster and the Olympic roster are two different beasts. You're now allowed 23 players on a World Cup roster. The Olympics, it's still 18. Olympic qualifying, as far as I remember, still 18 players, with two of those players having to be goalkeepers. So it's 16 positional players. The U.S., as we do know, have a couple of players that have announced that they are going to retire from the game of soccer. But that means Kristi Mewis has to not only perform well in her time with Bayern, but she's going to need to leapfrog a few players at her, you know, winger position to try and make that team. But then again, playing competitive league in Germany, getting good matches, getting good training week in, week out, she's going to be going into what could be the Olympic qualifiers very fresh. And if I was Jill Ellis, I would be taking a little more notice than she has been taking since her time with the U.S. team, at least in terms of Kristi Mewis.
Completely agree. I've interviewed Kristi a couple of times, and really great girl, and wonder her left foot. We saw her score some beauties in a struggling Boston team this year. But, you know, we talk about players that have joined the league. Wolfsburg, we mentioned Elise Bisoglia and Lara Dickenman. Last few weeks, mate, Ramona Backman, one of the standout players during Switzerland's short stay in the World Cup, but managed to prize her away from Rosengard before the end of her contract. Ramona came out and said that she would see out the end of her contract, which I think was due to run until the end of December. But she's made the move early, and that is a big coup for Wolfsburg, because Backman, she is a talent.
Oh, I mean, the world, for those who didn't know about Ramona Backman, is just watch her do a 50-yard sprint with a ball at her feet and then come back and talk to us. She may be one of the fastest players in the world in terms of dribbling a ball and creating opportunities, because with that Swiss team, you know, while the finishing touch at times was not there during the World Cup, she was beating 6-7 defenders, starting with the ball from her own half, and then dribbling just through, making a slalom run that would make any skier proud of how well she was able to maneuver. So, yeah, that's a huge signing for them.
Yeah, absolutely, and no surprise that they find themselves top of the league. Very early days, champions Bayern Munich just behind them, FFC Frankfurt down in third. Teams that finished in the top three last year currently occupying the top three positions. One thing I will cover off very quickly, because we're nearly at the end of the show. Backman has come over from Rosengard in Sweden, one of the star players of the Swedish league. I put out a tweet, is the Swedish league losing its appeal? We now see players moving to the likes of Germany, France, even England now is becoming an appeal, and the US, as we know. There are less stars in that league now. Since Tiddeso's demise a few years ago, Rosengard have lost a few players here and there. They don't have a lot of competition from many other teams. Are we starting to see the Swedish league lose a little bit of its appeal?
You know, I'm going to have to do a very political thing and bypass this question until after the off season. If we don't see moves, you know, in the winter months before the next Swedish league starts, and I would have to then say that, yeah, we, you know, it was Tiraso the last downfall for the Swedish league in terms of deep competition. I mean, you know, there are still teams that could theoretically on a given day go out and compete, absolutely, because the class is still there. But at the same time, as you pointed out, there are players that are willing to maybe even sacrifice a little money, but go to a little more of a competitive background and apply their trade there. So I'm not going to answer it right now, but the trend is going that way. That is what I will say.
Yeah, agreed. And I hope that it doesn't lose its appeal, because it has been very competitive and there are still some very good players, the likes of Pernille Harder, who we've had on the show a couple of times, playing her football in Linköping. Rosengard have still got the likes of Marta, who we know is a world-class individual. So hopefully it won't be losing its appeal. And we'll guess we'll have to see how they perform in the Champions League as well. We've got Rosengard, we've got Örebro in the Champions League this year. So we'll have to see how they do when they kick off at the beginning of October in the UEFA Women's Champions League. But JJ, that brings us to the end, mate. I look down at my recorder, 48 minutes. I think with the interviews that we slot in, it's going to be just over an hour. So it's gone very quickly. Thanks very much again for joining me, pal.
Not a problem. And hopefully I'm going to pitch at some point, maybe time to educate a little bit down the road, that we bring in a college American aspect, because the college game has kicked off. We're going to see the next crop of young, bright American stars getting going. And we could very well see in the draft that I know that on prior talks you had mentioned you may be coming over next January to take in the NWSL college draft, and I think it'd be a right time for a little bit of education.
Absolutely, certainly a plan, or certainly on my agenda, to try and get over there for the draft. I've heard good things about it, so certainly I would like to get over, and we'll certainly look at the college game as and when we get some time to do that. But thank you very much again for tuning in, guys. Really appreciated. Know there's other podcasts out there that you could listen to, but hopefully you'll stick with us. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so. We're on Twitter, on @WosoZone. You can email us with any feedback, good or bad, on wosozone@gmail.com. And of course, the show is available to download on iTunes, or you can listen online at audioboom.com/WosoZone. And I think, my friend, that is it. So I will say farewell, and I will see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, no problem. Looking forward to the next one.
And thanks a lot to you, listeners. We will catch up with you very soon.